From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Shake it, don't break it. Welcome to The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. My guest, writer, director Andrea Arnold, has a unique gift for the intimate and creating tension in small spaces. We've seen in her films such as her terrific Short Wasp and her feature films such as Red Road and one of my personal favorites, Fish Tank. Her newest film is a cross-cultural adaptation of Wuthering Heights, the Ponce Andrea Arnold sits across from me. Thanks so much for being here.
Don't you fully need to explain why you call me Ponce?
No. We have very educated listeners. Even now they're tuning off because I use the word Ponce to describe the guest.
But I hope they're not thinking I'm really Ponce because I'm not.
No. We're being what we like to call ironic in this country. I think you would call it the Daily Mail where you live, but that's another conversation altogether. But one of the things I do love about what you do is right down to the way you frame the movies using the old Academy framing, which is terrific to see that box in the center of the screen. Tell me why it is you do that. That's kind of specific to you.
Yes, I've done two films that way now.
Two feature films in theater.
Two feature films in that ratio. It's a controversial ratio to choose, and it's not popular because some projectors don't project it. And
lots of projectors.
Yeah, no, they don't. But there is a way of doing it so that you know when you do in the digital process, it ends up on digital and you can project it that way. So you can do it, but it's not popular. Well, I've wondered about why I'm attracted to it, and. Because first of all, it was quite an instinctive choice, and I loved the way it looks. And there's lots of reasons. I mean, there's lots of simple reasons that it's the shape of the 35mm negative. You know, that's a square shape, and I love the idea that you're projecting the whole negative. You know, you're not chopping anything off. It sort of seems something honest about that. But I've thought about it more, and I think the real reason I like it is because often my films are about one person and I'm trying to get inside the head of one person, and I want you to be sort of really thinking about that person and paying attention to them and wondering what's going on inside their head. And I think it's the perfect frame for following one person. And, it's like a Polaroid frame. When you frame somebody using 4x3, it makes the human being very important in the frame. It gives them a lot of respect. And you know, if you do the sort of, longer frames, then you have more environment.
Sure.
Yeah, they become less important in the frame. And I think that's why I love it. I think that's the real reason I really love it.
I think part of it, though, is it's a very photographic style. In a way, it makes us feel we're looking at family photographs.
Yeah.
And these have been very personal family stories that you've told, very intimate stories. And I think for Fish Tank and for Wuthering Heights, it really lends itself to that, doesn't it?
Yeah. The other thing is quite interesting, I think, is that CinemaScope and the wide screens that we're used to, apparently the only reason they came about is because Hollywood wanted to make cinema look very different from television.
Television, absolutely.
So in a way, that's a stupid reason to invent that frame, isn't it? There's no creative reason for that apart from, you know, them being kind of pretentious.
Well, my guess who's criticizing the whole of cinematography is writer-director Andrea Arnold, when the film is Wuthering Heights, it's The Treatment, which you can hear at kcrw.com. But I just really feel like it's like thumbing through photographs, and it doesn't feel invasive at all in the way that sometimes a widescreen, as the camera moves, can make us feel we're like pushing into somebody's territory.
Mm.
You want the camera to feel like it's just sitting there observing, don't you?
Yeah. I guess that's nice that you say that. Thank you. And I do think that it is like the Polaroids, like just regular. And in actual fact, I used. I used a couple of books with I showed Robbie, who's Ryan, who's a cinematographer. We looked at a couple of books with Polaroids in, you know, regular, like you say, sort of almost everyday regular photographs. And they do, you know, that is a sort of intimate, sort of very personal way of doing things, I think. So,
which books did you look? Do you remember?
There's a book, Tarkovsky's Polaroids.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
which has that incredible depth of feel in those Polaroids.
Yeah,
too,
they're,
goes really
they're beautiful.
Back.
I mean, they're very beautiful. And there's another book that we looked at that was just a book of, I think there were. I can't remember if it's by one person or by lots of people, but anyway, it's just a book of Polaroids. But they were both, you know, about Polaroids. I mean, I don't think do they exist anymore, the Polaroid camera?
They do, but Polaroid doesn't make the film anymore. Now you have to use Fujifilm for it.
Yeah.
Because it's funny, though, because one of the reasons I think, too, you use that the old 133 box Academy format, because you came out of television, and you're used to looking at a lot of television.
Yeah, although the television I did was not 4x3. That's way back. How old do you think I am?
I'm not making a judgment about you. I'm really saying if you're looking at this stuff on the monitor somewhere, you're seeing it in that box.
Yeah, although I've grown up with television. Oh, you know, there isn't 4x3 anymore. I mean, television isn't even 4x3 anymore, is it? So, although I did see an old documentary the other day about space, and it was 4x3, and it was so beautiful. And you know, I mean, people get upset when you know, I make a 4x3 film, and when, you know, it ends up on television, people get upset about that because they think you're including all this black on the television and they don't like it. But actually, I saw a documentary the other day in 4x3 and it was so beautiful. So I think people should be braver and embrace.
Well, it calls attention to the pictorial quality in a way that I think that widescreen does not, because we're so used to that now. I mean, it's the coin of the realm. In terms of filmmaking choices, that to make that kind of decision about it makes people pay attention, does it not?
I guess. I like the way as well it brings your eyes to the center of the screen. You know, you're just looking at the screen. I mean, quite often on, you know, the widescreen films, you know, it's like Wimbledon. You're looking left at someone talking, you're looking right, you're looking left. Your head is going like this, like you're watching a Wimbledon match.
That's what I was saying. You're directing the eye by doing that.
Yeah.
The viewer's eye as well as your own.
But your head as well. I mean, you're actually, I find myself moving my head watching people talking in a two-shot on widescreen. Whereas 4x3, you're just staring ahead at the image.
But I think, too, for you, it's a way of creating tension because so much of the film, going back to Wassa and Red Road, they're all about that tension in those rooms, in those really small rooms, and how people inhabit them and how they're on top of each other.
Yeah.
And that adds to that too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It's funny how Wuthering Heights, you know, in everyone's head is this big gothic mansion on the moors, and I immediately sort of pick a two up, two down house. It's just like the houses I pick on the housing estates. Exactly the same thing. In fact, Heathcliff, James Howson, he played the older Heathcliff, he didn't know much about Wuthering Heights when he started doing the film, and he looked on the internet and he saw these gothic mansions, and then I took him up to the hill farm and he was very disappointed because I think he thought he was going to be, you know, lord of this great big gothic mansion, and he was very disappointed. And he said, is this it? Is this Heathcliff's house? And I said, I'm sorry, it is. And it's, you know, two rooms downstairs, two rooms upstairs, pretty much like all the other places I filmed in my other films, you know, on the housing estates.
But yeah, I mean, I thought that was an interesting choice too, because if you read the book, after really, the first 20 pages, not aware of the size of the spaces anymore. It really is about people getting on top of each other and basically sort of invading each other's territory, which is key to the way you tell stories.
Yeah, it's been very true of all my films, actually. I'm very interested in people living closely together and the things you hear and the, you know, just being right that close to each other. I mean, that seems to happen. I mean, I've seem to do that all the time. And actually, weirdly, I seem to do this thing of having people on top of each other inside the house and then out in space, you know, and getting them out into huge space. So there's obviously something going on psychologically that I don't fully understand myself.
Well, that's why you're here. We're here to probe these. It's the Ponzi treatment. My guest is writer-director Andrea Arnold. Her newest film is Director, is an adaptation of Wuthering Heights. You can also hear the show at kcrw.com. Another thing that I'm interested in sizes, and the young Kathy towers over the young Heathcliff.
Yeah. Yeah, does she? I have not even noticed, does she?
She's a bit too taller than he is.
Is she? Yeah. Are you sure?
She wasn't
I'm not sure. I think they might be about the same. But I'm just trying to think that bit where she pulls his hair, and I'm remembering the camera's looking down at her. And we're over his shoulder, so I think.
But she's certainly in confidence terms.
I think in spirit she seems that way, and probably you might get that impression. I think they're about the same size. Also, she had to wear lots of skirts, poor thing. So she, I think that sort of gives her this.
Skirts give the impression of height. I'm learning so
that
much.
She's taller.
Today.
Yeah.
But you do. You do like these women who have these presences where they fill the room more than the men do. In the films you
made. Yeah, maybe because, people have said that.
Being in that group of people who have said that.
I grew up with more women than men, I think. So, and I grew up with very strong women. So women, probably I feel I understand and know women more, and men are a bit more distant.
As you mentioned in other interviews, this was a project that came to you that you didn't seek out and that you weren't going to do. And I wonder if how much of your own perspective you were conscious of and bringing to the story.
You're very perceptive, aren't you?
No. You just need some sleep.
I do. Well, you know, I mean, obviously you're attracted to things for all kinds of reasons, you know, and a lot of people who've seen this film, even though it's not exactly, but I mean, some people say, oh, it's a departure. It's not, you know, I think a lot of people who know my other work say it's not a departure at all.
No, you're attracted
to things. I mean, I always say that your projects, I don't choose my projects, they choose me. And in a way, that's true. And even though this came to me, once it came to me, I made this instinctive choice to go ahead. I just could not put it down. And it was a very tricky project to deal with. And obviously, it's a kind of stupid thing to do, try and do an adaptation of one of the most classic, most famous books of all time. I mean, in a hurry as well. You know,
but it's been done in so many ways that feel slightly like they're objectifying the material. And you really sort of deal with the fact that, you know, your desires get the better of you, which is what the book is.
Yeah. You know, the Buñuel version is called The Abyss of Passion. I thought, yeah, passion is an abyss, isn't it? And your desires do get the better of you. And you're circling something interesting, I think. Yeah.
But I feel like it's really, really close to that, because that book has so much heat in it. I mean, and it feels claustrophobic.
Yeah.
Especially near the end, where it becomes incredibly doomy, and you certainly, again, you lead us to that. I mean,
yeah.
it's the first version of the movie that feels like kind of a cliffhanger.
Mm. Yeah, and I tried to leave it like that. You know, there was more to come. I mean, I tried really hard within the world that I sort of was dealing with. I tried really hard to capture the essence of what I felt the book was, and not exactly a truthful. You know, I mean, people ask me about, you know, some of my choices and, you know, are they like the book? And some of them are, some of them aren't. I took artistic license with the language and things like that. But I tried to capture what I thought was the heart of the book, you know, which was, you know, its dark heart, really. And
yeah, because it's certainly pre-Freudian. I mean, there's no real analysis of this. And in so many, even going back to Oberon and Olivier, they're kind of sort of telling us about what they're feeling at the time they're feeling it. And there's this thing that I love about your work, this sense of people not being able to articulate what they feel, only their frustration about not being able to achieve it.
Yeah. Then there's very little articulating in this film. There's no dialogue virtually, is there?
Well,
no
one's telling anybody what they feel. I'm not trying to give the entire movie away. Gee whiz, let's let people want to see it. But that sense of stripping away and just letting us feel as people move through these rooms and there's too many people in the room or the spaces are too small to contain all of this kind of epic emotion.
I mean, I really try hard to sort of get inside people's heads in the film. And I have this faith in images and in people's faces that you can read. In, you know, I like to explore sort of getting inside the head of who I'm, you know, looking at. And by using images and by using the right kind of faces. So it's an interesting, you know, I'm pushing myself to try to do that with each film. I seem to be pushing myself. And I don't, you know, I never know if I'm going to manage it, but I'm always pushing. So, and I've been saying earlier today how much I always look for trouble when I'm working. I don't like to make things easy for myself. I create trouble and make things very difficult so that I'm really, you know, every day is full of challenges, and I really don't know how it's going to turn out. I never like it safe.
Clearly. We're going to take a break. My guest is writer and director Andrea Arnold. Her new film is adaptation of Wuthering Heights. Give her a chance to get some rest. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Take KCRW with you on one of our smartphone apps. Available for the iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. You can stream KCRW live, listen to podcasts, and all our news and music streams. Learn more and download at kcrw.com/apps.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at kcrw.com. My guest who came out looking for trouble, as the line goes from the film Fish Tank, which she wrote and directed, is Andrea Arnold. She's here for her adaptation of Wuthering Heights. You've talked a lot about going back to the description in the book of Heathcliff, and certainly the word dark is used, but Lankar, when you hear that, first of all, tell people what that part of the world is. What's the word that's used to describe Heathcliff?
Lascar.
Lascar, yes.
Lascar, yeah. Yes. He's called a little Lascar by Linton, I think.
Yes.
He says, you're a little Lascar. Lascar means Indian seaman. I looked it up.
And it also refers to a part of South Africa, of the Cape of Good Hope.
Oh, does it? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did not know that. Oh, that's interesting. No, I looked up that description and it said Indian seaman. I mean, I picked out every description of him. I mean, I started by trying to be really, really faithful to what I thought Emily was describing. I think she doesn't, on some level, she doesn't really totally commit. I think she doesn't describe him that much. But, and we, first of all, when we first started looking, we did actually go, because I thought Little Lascar, and then he's described, I think Nelly says, is your mother a Chinese emperor, and your father a Chinese emperor, and your mother an Indian princess. So another Asian reference. And he's often called Gypsy, that is referred to a few times. And then I thought about the Romany gypsies that would have been around then. They originated from Asia. And I looked at pictures and they're incredibly dark skinned. And I looked, first of all, at casting. In fact, we did start looking in Romany gypsy camps in the north of England. And then as this happened sort of right at the very beginning before I started writing the script and really exploring. And then I started thinking about where he comes from, which is Liverpool. He's picked up in Liverpool. And then I was thinking there was a massive slave trade at that point. So there's this other thought that maybe he could have been the son of a slave. So I was looking at the descriptions of him, thinking about, you know, coming from Liverpool. And then I was thinking, actually, what's really important is his difference. And that's, in a way, what I guess I was interested in looking at, and probably what I identify with, and probably why I picked Heathcliff's story. So that became, and also because I think Emily felt different being female, or at least felt sort of, there's something about Emily that I think felt like she didn't quite fit and felt different. And so for me, Heathcliff was part of what Emily was sort of exploring in herself, her difference. So I felt there was something to do with difference and that was important. And because I wanted to make a very visual film, I wanted to honour that in the book. So that's why I made that choice.
But in this case, though, it applies to both protagonists. I mean, Heathcliff really wants to belong, and he's, just by casting someone of color, that treatment that he gets really feels apt in a way that it's weird, because going back to reread the book after I saw the movie, and I saw it in Poland last fall, I saw myself thinking, this completely makes sense. It's that sort of harmonic key to it. It's almost like hearing somebody play a song in the right key and going, oh, that's how it's supposed to sound. Yeah. It's not supposed to be that high. It's supposed to be down here. Mm. It felt
right to me, actually. I think it felt right, definitely. And there's been a lot of, you know, I get asked about it a lot, but I actually think, why didn't anyone do it before? It seems unusual to me that they haven't done it before.
I'm sorry, why didn't white people put black people in the movies? Is that your question? Well, that's a novel thing to bring up here. It's The Treatment. My guest who has many questions about the movie business is Andrea Arno. Her new film is adaptation of Wuthering Heights. You can also hear the show at kcrw.com. I guess one of the things I wondered is, because you came here and you studied at AFI instead of studying in the UK, if that sort of embedded your sense of being an outsider, or did you feel like you belonged at AFI, or what was that like for you?
Loved AFI. I had such a great year.
Yeah?
It was fantastic to live in LA for a year. I think I made that decision. I'd been sort of an actor before, and I was I wanted to make a real clean break with what I was doing, and I was a bit well known in the UK, and I didn't want to. I just felt I needed to get away somewhere where I felt like I was starting again, and I was free, and I wasn't taking any baggage with me. And so I just made this decision to come here. And I loved it here.
You were away at the time. There was kind of this interesting boom in film in the UK. There's that interesting gangster film thing that was happening in the early 90s.
That gangster thing has not gone away.
Exactly.
We've got the Sweeney now.
It has not gone away. Yes, it never goes. It just sort of resurfaces.
That's a big English genre.
But it felt like there was all these sort of masculine ways on commenting on what that life was like, or else we had...
Not that anyone knows.
Of course. See, now you're being you. Now the real you is coming out. She's feisty, folks.
No, I'm not. I'm just jesting.
She came out looking for trouble. I just love that. I love that line so much in Fish Tank. And I just thought, she's heard that before.
What line was that?
When your heroine's mother says of her, oh, yeah, she cried every day when she was born. Oh. I think she came out looking for trouble.
Right. God, I didn't remember that myself. I quite like the line, I don't care if you're going nowhere, I still want to come. Because she wants to go there. I'm going nowhere. I don't care if you're going nowhere, I still want to come.
But I do love that those lines that really give somebody away. But just that idea, because, again, in those gangster movies, it's about a guy who was born to cause trouble. Mm. And in your films, there's been a woman who causes trouble. But not in this sort of conscious filmic way, mm-hmm. but rather somebody who's really not aware of what her power is.
Well, I guess girls can find trouble too, can't they?
I keep hearing that. In your movies, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I don't really think too hard about my... I mean, I do, obviously, but I don't dwell on them. I don't go back and try and analyze them. But I think there is an innocence, if you like. The trouble is coming from an innocent place. I'm probably exploring that, I'm sure.
It's the treatment, my guess, is the troublesome man. No, not at all. The inquisitive Andrea Arnold. We're talking about her film, Wuthering Heights. You can hear the show at kcrw.com. I'm wondering, though, because you played so many film festivals, what's that like for you versus the experience of seeing the film in a theater with a paying audience?
I mean, festivals are always full of people that are really keen to see the film, so you get a very enthusiastic audience. Do you mean the difference between that and then going to like a regular cinema?
Yes.
I don't go and see my films. I've had enough of it by the time it comes out.
You don't want to go see it just to see how the audience responds
I do towards the end of the edit is I bring in lots of people to watch the, you know, regular audiences to watch the film and critique it. And I ask them to be brutal. So I get a very good idea about what works and what doesn't work. And I the last thing I want to do is see it again, actually. I usually want to sort of not see it for a long time.
Really? So you don't tend to do that?
No, I haven't seen any of my films for a really long time, any of them. I mean, I put a lot into them and they take a lot out of me. And I mean, Wuthering, I cried a lot making Wuthering because it's a brutal film and there's a lot of horrible things that happen to Heathcliff. And I, writing it, I cried a lot and it did upset me and I still haven't made peace with it. I mean, even to this day,
How do you mean?
I don't know. I mean, you don't always pick, you know, I mean, I enjoy what I do massively, but it always takes it out of me and I always have to sort of almost live it a bit when I do it. And, you know, I feel it. And so, you know, making that film upset me. And you're attracted to material sometimes for things that are not easy, you know, and you know, maybe kind of reach into some troubled parts of yourself. And that's not kind of easy to make peace with. I don't know. I have not made peace with this film at all. I could go and make a sort of remake of Mary Poppins or something next.
I don't want to see your Mary Poppins.
You do really? Some people do.
You do something else. I don't want you to go back to that stuff. But I wonder, too, if casting so many actors who are new to film, if that helps you somehow get through this process, having somebody who you're basically introducing to this world and being protective of, if that helps you in terms of the filmmaking process.
Yeah, it's very interesting. When I do cast... I like to cast authentically, and I'm also, I think, casting for faces. And as I said earlier, I like to feel that you can see something in a face without them even opening their mouths or doing anything. So, you know, for example, James, when I met him, I think he had this vulnerability that I saw straight away, and also this anger that's just in his, it's just there in him. And he doesn't have to do anything. It's just there in his face. And so that's one of the reasons. But obviously, if you're casting people who have these true qualities, then they might be, well, really vulnerable. And you don't actually know when you first start off with somebody like that quite how vulnerable they might be. And it is an interesting process. And, you know, obviously, you're giving them this opportunity. You know, James wasn't working before. And some of the other actors, you know, Lee, who plays Hindley, you know, he wasn't working, and it's a fantastic opportunity for them to maybe change their lives and to do something else and to actually learn about themselves. And they do, you know, that does happen. But quite often I find myself when I cast these people, I always get really galvanized. Like, I do want to protect them and I do want to give them something. And it is almost like it gives me a reason to do the film. It becomes a very, and it's something quite deep in me, I think, because when I do cast them, it changes the way I feel about it.
You can feel them reacting honestly to the other actors in the scene and the way that there's no calculation in these performances.
Yeah.
And I wonder how you found your actress for the film, for Wuthering Heights.
Kaya.
Yeah.
Kaya, I'd seen a picture of, and I hadn't seen her do any acting or anything, and I just went to meet her, and I saw her just sort of staring out of the window, and there was just something about her immediately that I connected to and had an instinct about, and actually I do trust that, and later on I realised that she does have a very Kathy spirit. She's a very independent girl, Kaya. She's her own person, you know. She really, I love her for that she's her own person. She's not somebody who will pander, you know. She's very much her own person. She's got a good independent spirit, you know, a slight wildness to her, you know. Forgive me, Kaya, for saying that, but you know it's true.
She's never going to forgive you. No. But no, what's great about using, and it's something about the way you use Kathy in the film here, in that she's kind of opening Pandora's box. And that's something that I found to be really kind of primal. Mm. And that's the word I want to use for your Wuthering Heights. Because there's not so much over-deliberate conversation and people striding about great halls and having these conversations, there is a primal quality to it. I mean, it feels, the reason I bring up floors and the ground, it feels closer to the earth than any version of Wuthering Heights I'd ever seen.
I think the book is very elemental, and I wanted to... I wanted to capture that. And when I wrote my first outline for the script, that's how I thought about it. I thought about all the violence, all the nature, all the very, you know, the mud and the animals and the sky and the rain and all the very, you know, basic elemental, you know, things in nature and also in people. That's everything. That's how I sort of, basically my philosophy from the beginning was that, using all those things. Every time I got to a scene, I would try and find the most elemental core of that scene and bring that out. So that's how I went through, you know, deciding what to do. And that was from the very beginning. I almost wanted to do it because of its elemental nature. You know, that's almost one of the reasons I wanted to do it, is to get very involved with that.
Andrew, we're out of time. I'm so sorry. So great to have you here. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you very much. Nice to talk to you.
Oh, my pleasure. My guest is Andrea Arnold, no Ponce here. Her new film as writer-director is a terrific and thrilling, I think, adaptation of Wuthering Heights. Our recording engineer at KCRW is Darby Maloney. This show is mixed by J.C. Swadek. It is edited and produced by Jenny Radelet. I'm going to go see Mary Poppins again. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. Da-da.